usually when there's a funding announcement involving the various levels of government, there may be one, two, at most three cabinet ministers there. But the federal election is about to officially get started. Things are different. Our reporter noted today at a news conference in Toronto involving a $1 billion investment, about 20 politicians and bureaucrats came out for this. So many it looked like a class photo behind the podium, all trying to get that wonderful pic they can tweet out, "See all the hard work I'm doing, spending your money." Not all of them MPs, but enough that you find yourself asking, "Who's that guy? What file is he responsible for? I've never seen him before." Now, the $1 billion will go towards two transit projects in the city. Just under $600 million to build six new SmartTrack stations on GO's Lakeshore East, Stouffville, and Kitchener lines. The mayor thinks construction could start next year. He's thinking around summertime. Another $500 million will go towards the remodel of Bloor Yonge Station. It's still in the planning stages. Construction not expected to start until around 2023. This project is going to take 5 years, probably more if history's any indication. It'll see a new platform added for Line 2 and a reconfiguration of the Line 1 platform when it comes to Bloor Yonge, adding capacity, alleviating crowding, improving reliability. It's one of the busiest transit hubs in North America, more than 200,000 travelers on an average weekday. Now, that wasn't the only announcement. Later on, the Minister of Border Security and Organized Crime Reduction, Bill Blair, yes, the former police chief in Toronto, announcing $54 million in new spending over the next 3 years to support the province's gun, gangs, and violence reduction strategy. Blair says Ontario will use this money to address criminal activity before it starts and provide help for kids already in gangs who now want out. Now, I wanted our reporter to ask the simple question, like other parties in the past, of course, are the Liberals trying to buy votes right now? We see this every election campaign, empty promise after empty promise, billions in spending, enough already. The reporter chickened out. He asked about a healing lodge in Scarborough instead. That's because that's what our boss wanted, you wuss. But a city news reporter had the nerve to ask a similar sort of question.
Forgive me for being cynical. I've heard these announcements almost every year of my career. What's not being done that needs to be done?
One of the things that I think is absolutely critical is Canadians need to have confidence that all three orders of government are working for them. They're working together. And so I'm very proud to have the opportunity to stand here with the Attorney General and the Minister of Community Safety and with my colleagues both in the federal, provincial and municipal governments to say we stand united in support of our frontline officers, in support of our criminal justice system, in support of our community and people who are working hard in communities to keep them safe. I think it's important that we do that. I will also tell you, because I did this for a very long time in the city of Toronto.
Now, I cut that part off because it got too long-winded at this point.
Sure.
But we stand united. Of course, that'll fix all the gun violence. Programming note, Bill Blair will be on Moore in the Morning tomorrow. This will follow the 8 o'clock news, so they'll get some more questions in there about this spending announcement. Heck, maybe they'll ask him. You know, come on, it's pretty transparent. You're trying to buy votes, offering billions of dollars over the last month. Forget the official campaign. It's underway.
Mm-hmm. It would be really interesting if someone just broke protocol or whatever and just said, well, yeah, of course we want your votes. That's why we use as much of your taxpayer dollars as possible, because we want you to continue to put our party in power.
Well, we saw with the Liberals too, right?
What a stupid question. Of course you're right.
And we saw it with the province. It was just one announcement after another. And then the most bizarre aspect, where now they're trying to hold the PC to the Liberal promises that they made. Well, they were going to do this.
Right.
Of course they were. They were drowning. They were grasping anything they could. But this is just par for the course. We usually see this.
Okay, so I'm just going to take the cynical hat off here in the room. We do nothing but complain about how transit isn't funded, nothing is getting built, nothing's getting done, and now all of a sudden all three levels of government, who don't get along very well all the time, by the way, come together and say, hey, City of Toronto, we're going to reconfigure Bloor Station, which is a huge deal, and then they're going to put their money towards those SmartTrack stations, which... call them whatever you wish, but those SmartTrack stations are actually going to be quite significant along the line, right? They're going to add extra capacity. This is actually a big deal. It's not just, yes, there's an aspect to which is vote whatevering. That's the whole point. But you want to incentivize someone to do something.
I don't want your pro-Tory agenda,
It's not pro-Tory, because I'm also being pro-federal liberal right now, who gave the money.
I just love that Dave took a week off and he's come back completely 100% snark intact.
Yes.
But I don't know. What do you want? You want them to just mail the check and not talk about it?
No, I just don't want constant $1 billion worth of promises that A, are empty, or B, simply trying to buy your vote.
So
it's empty. It's
by empty you mean
hollow?
Why is it hollow or empty?
You don't think this funding will ever happen?
Well, we'll see if the Liberals get in place. This is the same Liberal government that promised we'd have a balanced budget right now.
Is it not? So it's funded after? So it's not funded right now in a year?
Well,
do we know that?
It's funded in the sense that they say they can get started next summer, but I didn't see the details on whether they're just going to write a check for $1 billion tomorrow. I imagine not.
So I think the question is, if it's hollow or it's less, I agree to a point with you if it's back-end funding. But if the funding flows this year, then...
There's also the aspect of they have to win.
Not if the funding flows this year. It doesn't matter. That we should check. Like, you should check that,
no,
though. That's a difference.
There's no way.
What do you mean?
There's no way it's flowing this year.
There's guns and gangs money flowing this year right now.
Yeah, $54 million compared to $1 billion.
But I'm saying part of it could be committed this year in year, so they can't cancel it.
In what way?
In the way that you sign agreements or the stuff starts to go.
Nah. Like,
for example, the city's got all the planning done. They
it's
can give
happening.
The money for it. I think you should do some homework, my friend.
Listen, I know you work for the mayor. That's okay.
I don't work for the mayor. Right now, I'm actually justifying what the feds are doing. But anyway, which is not something I never do.
Just making friends every day, buddy. Aren't you? Welcome home.
You got to watch. Home. You got to watch the sources. It's all around us. It's all our panelists. They always have some poker and some fire somewhere. We're the only ones that are honest to you. Me and you, Jay.
It's because nobody wants to offer me a poker.
Would you like a poker?
What do you got? Whose agenda do you need me to feed? Not a problem. Of course not. Let's talk cooperation and lack thereof in the city.
Yes, heading into the federal election campaign, it appears gun violence is the number one issue in Toronto. Shootings without injuries up more than 40%, with injuries more than 20% at this point. It's been a rough year, making life even more difficult for police trying to catch the bad guys. No help from the people who saw it go down. Chief Mark Saunders, he told Moore in the morning today, no witnesses have come forward following a shooting at a party on the weekend.
My appeal is for witnesses. Whether you're not doing it because you thought the other guy was going to do it, they're not doing it. So I want you to pick up the phone. I want you to make those phone calls.
Now, there were about 100 people at this party. Toronto Mayor John Tory, also, he's annoyed by this.
It's frustrating, and it can even make you angry when... Everybody isn't sort of together doing what has to be done.
But you already knew that, Amanda. And the Minister of Organized Crime Reduction, Bill Blair, former Toronto police chief, was also asked about this. It was during his stop in the city this afternoon.
It's fear. I think there is no greater enemy of public safety than fear. And when people become afraid, they don't take their kids to the park, they don't go shopping on Main Street, they don't engage with their neighbors, they don't engage with public officials, and they don't cooperate in police investigations. And so one of the responsibilities of all of us, including the police, is to eliminate and reduce fear in our communities. And the best way to do that is to be present and effective in every community.
Now, it's worth mentioning, for those afraid of reprisal, calls to Crime Stoppers, they are anonymous. So they just want you to call and say, this is what I saw, This is the individual I think it was. And then at the end of the day, I mean, sometimes they do need witnesses, but I think they're getting to the point where they just want the information, then they can go from there.
Sure, yeah, and justifiably so.
It's how frustrating.
Of course it is. How can not a single person have seen anything? That just speaks to either mass fear or mass distrust or mass hatred of police.
I think some of the people were texting in and saying, what do you expect? Because basically someone would go in, give testimony to police, which I think the Crime Stoppers thing makes sense. But they would give testimony to police and the guys are out like the next day or the next week and then they get retribution, right?
Yeah, so, fear of reprisal.
So I think part of this is maybe, I was kind of saying the bail argument, all that kind of stuff, like it sounded like a bit of a talking point or something to me, but I think there's maybe a lot more to that. If that is the reason why people aren't coming forward, and we actually need to have a conversation with, it's beyond the city and, you know, the chief and all that kind of stuff. And it's to the feds or the province on how these court cases are administered and how they're punished.
Yeah, because we used to hear that in the back. And part of you see that aspect where, well, I'm not going to step forward and say this is what happened, with fear that someone is going to shoot a family member as a reprisal, that this is the sort of threats they've seen in the past in these communities where gun violence is prevalent, that they will say, whoever talks will die, or one of your family members will. So you can understand why people are hesitant. But we do have a system in place such as this, minus once again testifying, where you can step forward and provide some valuable information that at least sends the police in the direction of, you know, which direction am I headed that way to that individual, and then and at that point back away. And I obviously say, I can't testify, but I can help you out.
All right, let's stick with shootings.
Yeah, let's stick with them. Police do track down the people allegedly responsible sometimes. It was a couple of weeks ago, Jane and Finch neighborhood. Officers located a car with bullet holes. The investigation led them to raiding a number of homes in the GTA yesterday. So Once again, two kids, 19 years old, one's from Toronto, the other from Brampton. They've been arrested. They face 16 charges in total. Among those, one of my favorites stood out, two counts of failure to comply with recognizance. Basically, he's out on bail, didn't honor his release conditions, allegedly broke the law again, was involved in a shooting. And, you know, that's the way the court system appears to work lately. And that's something Mayor Tory's actually hopped on as well. He had something to say about this as well.
When you see, as you've heard us say, and we're saying it over and over again because it's true, there are people who are repeatedly being arrested and let out on bail. This past weekend, again, as a different example, one of the people that was involved in the shooting on Friday night was a person who had not one but two recent convictions for firearms offenses in recent years, and yet they're back out on the street now doing it again.
And this is one that drives me nuts every time.
Yeah.
The idea that, as he says, you have them, and then, oh, no, we'll just let them go. I'm sure they'll be good this time.
You know what made me laugh about that clip? Not to be too inside baseball-y. There's a hollow thunk you can hear. 100% that's him, like, on the podium being like, I'm mad.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like my dad, like, lightly irritated, but it's like a Mayor Tory 9 out of 10 anger level.
Did you teach him that?
No, I did not. No, that's all authentic.
Stop picking on Amanda.
I haven't worked there in like 4 years.
Oh, I get it.
Dave will go with anything he can find.
I understand.
He'll latch onto it.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's a familiar refrain from the mayor, and he's not wrong. How can you not feel exactly that way?
We've been talking about this for a while,
yeah,
too, right?
Yeah.
Just stop letting them out.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, well, there are laws, there are rights. Yeah, I get it. But when it comes to bail and release conditions and recognizance, they just keep them locked up then. If they've demonstrated this is what they do.
Let's go from fear in our homes to fear on the roads.
Yes, it's all about being afraid today. It's terrifying to think how many inexperienced commercial truck drivers are out there. They're operating rigs. They can weigh in excess of 70,000 pounds. And really, they're instruments of destruction. They're instruments of death in the wrong hands, incompetent hands. Now, take the guy driving a fully loaded dump truck and trailer in Uxbridge last Friday. He rolled it into a ditch on Regional Road 47. He'd actually pulled off to the shoulder, didn't know what he was doing, rolled into a ditch. And that's after one driver had to swerve onto the shoulder to avoid being struck head-on by the guy driving this dump truck. So witnesses thought, they say, surely this guy is drunk, call police. He's not. The investigation revealed the 40-year-old man from Brampton just didn't have enough experience.
Yeah, we've charged him under the Traffic Act for careless driving, and we're obviously concerned about the size of this vehicle and having an inexperienced driver behind the wheel.
From Durham Police. And then, of course, this follows this morning that we told you. It was the big deal this morning. 401 Eastbound Express near Bayview shut down those lanes. They were out of commission for about 8 hours. And yet again, a transport truck driver slammed into the back of slow-moving traffic. We've seen this before. There was an earlier collision. Someone, he obviously wasn't paying attention, was distracted in some way, hits into the back of another truck. Somebody doesn't notice the three OPP and MTO vehicles with lights flashing. Well, he's been charged with careless driving as well. Now, there are new federal regulations on the way, expected in the new year. And, of course, Ontario, this is as of 2017. It requires entry-level training, include at least 103 hours of instruction. Maybe we need to add more. Let's hope the federal rules step up, because this is just a consistent theme we see over and over again in the newsroom.
And does this, you know, speak to the fact that we can't get enough people to get into this industry?
Yeah, I think it is. Do people see, was truck driving ever a romantic, wonderful job that people aspired to get?
My father-in-law is just about to retire, and he wanted to get to 50 years of doing it.
Really?
Yeah, and he was doing runs from Nova Scotia to Prince Edward Island back and forth, and he just now did a few more runs. I think he just turned 70 years old. And he's got, you know, a great driving record, always loved it, was always great at it. He left that industry and came back to it two or three different times and just really loved driving long-haul trucking.
What does he tell you about the industry, though? Does he have any insight to say, here's the issue?
I think that there's a lot of problems with younger and experienced drivers. And a bigger problem is that, you know, to try and, you know, stem that tide of that's sort of the inexperience meets safety aspect of it. Of you've got to get a certain amount of hours, but at the same time, you need to keep trucks rolling, right? So it's sort of a, and you look at, you know, 2019, and I always wonder, and I always play this game, and I don't see this all of the time, but I play it with cars as well as trucks. If I ever see a car weave, I always think to myself, well, you're looking at a phone.
Yeah.
And if I can get close enough, it's usually a person, they're looking down in their lap. And I've seen it in trucks as well, where you pull up right alongside of someone that's got like a double load on, like a trailer and another trailer. And you look up and they're on their phone.
I do think, though,
it's so scary.
Yeah, it's scary. It's, but the one thing I was thinking about this story is just autonomous vehicles and autonomous trucks. Like, they're already testing them in the States. So as much as this is an issue and should be dealt with, is this going to be an issue in 10 years, 15 years? Probably not.
And will the CB chatter be boring? Because it's all
it's
robots.
It's all AI.
It's all robots.
Like the old modems.
What do opioids, Airbnb, and Mitch Marner have in common? Find out when we come back with Dave McKee's Views in the News. It is 6:16. Welcome back. Dave McKee is back as well with his views on the news as we continue.
Did you miss me?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
I did. Dave Bradley, super nice, super competent.
It's too nice.
But every once in a while, I miss the snark that comes with
McKee. Yeah, he's too nice.
He's too nice.
Everybody likes Dave. He's, I don't trust him.
He's way too nice. I hear that a lot. Opioids.
No comment.
Opioids is the topic of conversation.
Yeah, because the line outside Johnson & Johnson headquarters for compensation just got a lot longer. So a judge in Oklahoma this afternoon has found Johnson & Johnson and its subsidiaries help fuel the state's opioid drug crisis. It's ordered the consumer products giant pay almost $600 million to help address the problem. First state trial in the U.S. against the companies accused of contributing to the widespread use of this highly addictive painkiller. Companies expected to appeal. Yep. Oklahoma argued the company aggressively marketed opioids for years in a way that overstated their effectiveness and underplayed the addiction risk. Case could shape negotiations to resolve roughly 1,500 other opioid lawsuits that were consolidated before a federal judge in Ohio. So you can just hear everybody across the world saying, yeah, you played a part in this, and it's time you pay up too.
Yeah, and this is this is like big tobacco over and over again. Right?
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
It's the same type of timeline. And now it's, it's the opioid crisis. And it really is. It really is a crisis.
And they should. I mean, we're all paying in many different ways with lives and financially. Yeah, they should have to pay.
It's also been interesting to see as this has moved, because the loss is really starting in the U.S., but Canada has either been starting their own. BC's got one. Ontario's just joined it. So I think the next 10 to 15 years, you're going to be seeing governments increasingly suing these companies, and either there will be massive settlements or like 15, 20-year lawsuits where people get paid. But it's crazy.
Yeah, we're getting to that point.
Some Airbnb hearings in Toronto?
Yes. Not much to say. Just the hearings did get started today. So it's the City of Toronto, its attempt to regulate short-term rentals like Airbnb. They restrict rentals to the owner's principal residence, must register with the city, pay a 4% municipal tax. Now, housing advocates and property owners, they're challenging this. They're going against the city. These hearings expected to last at least the next week. Several residents appealed the changes. Now, the city argues with the housing crisis, too many short-term rentals, which would usually be long-term rentals, are now short-term rentals, not only worsens the problem. Opponents say the city is now with a sledgehammer, gutting. You got with a sledgehammer? The city is now with a large knife, gutting this important and flexible form of short-term accommodation without sufficiently considering or understanding the likely impacts of doing so. Regulations for short-term rentals, they were approved by council the start of this year, but they've been delayed due to this appeal. Once it's in the clear, then we will see those regulations in place, as long as they're not successful. But it sounds like, if I'm correct, Vancouver got very similar regulations through, so you would expect that there's the precedent right there.
And it's really been the wild, wild west
of
Airbnb from both sides of it. Like, you see, we had a story last week where a homeowner had an after-grad party at his house, and he thought he was renting to a couple. And they actually ended up, arresting like five people under the age of 20. And the damages were like $90,000. Then you have anecdotally, the only Airbnb experiences I've ever had have been nothing but fantastic. So there truly does need to be some fine tuning.
Yeah, see, I feel the same way. We just came back from an Airbnb. We used it in Nashville.
Okay.
And it was amazing, and it was a reasonable cost. And we received two floors of a condo, and there was space and a kitchen. And it's not like a hotel room where you sort of feel like you're on top of
each other. How did it compare to what you would have paid for a hotel?
I would say it was very reasonable, because if I'm right, it worked out to about $200 a night. That's for two couples. So you're really doing 100. Let's say with exchange, 150 Canadian a night. I mean, you would pay that easily for a couple in a hotel.
And two couples, and you had all that room.
And that was the best part. You felt like you just had space to get away from each other and room to go. And it was quiet as well. Nice area. So I do support it, but I also understand that this wild west of Airbnb, where suddenly your neighbor in your condo is renting out his secondary place all the time, and the tourists don't care whether they're quiet or respectful. That's an issue too.
Side note, did you see any celebs when you were in Nashville?
No. Did I see anyone? No.
We just go to their bars.
Yeah, I went to, you know, Kid Rock, and I saw the Johnny Cash Museum, and all that was interesting.
That's cool. I think that Kid Rock bar is new.
It is fairly new.
Yeah, because I went last summer.
It wasn't there.
And it wasn't there.
The barbecue is the best part.
Amen, brother. But I digress. Mitch Marner in the news today.
Yeah, have you seen Mitch Marner being attacked, mauled by vicious dogs at the Durham Police Headquarters in Whitby? Don't panic. It's not really the Leafs Center, just in case you thought it was. The Marner family donated the money to buy a custom-made bite suit for the K-9 unit there. So handlers decided, we'll base this on the design of his outfit, his hockey uniform. So sure enough, it's this full blue hockey uniform looking sort of bite suit, number 16 on the back. But that's what they're using now to, where they, you know, train the dogs.
Okay, we got to finish up with this story. I just watched him on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Did you? I found it a little dull, but it was interesting to see him. But boy, Jerry was really all over him, you know.
Yeah, he's got a mutual admiration society.
Yeah, so
I'm fascinated by Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, I am too. Eddie Murphy, he's going to return to Saturday Night Live, first time in 35 years.
The babies come from, boys and girls, when a man loves a woman very much, they lay down and the man gives the woman $20.
The comedian will host the show December 21st, right before Christmas. It'll mark the former cast member's first hosting appearance since 1984. He was actually a cast member from 1980 to 1984. I think 84, was that the year of the buddy cop movie he did?
That was your Beverly Hills Cop.
That's right. So
Trading Places. You're talking about Trading Places and, no, sorry, 48 Hours with Nick Nolte.
That's
was the
right.
Cop movie.
And he had that triple crown where he had the top song, top movie, and top show at the same
time.
Yeah.
Not bad. And I think he was, what, 20?
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy's got a couple of movies coming out. One that's going to be out next month. It's called My Name is Dolomite. And Coming to America 2.
I'm so excited.
Will be out in 2020. I know, just to see Arsenio Hall, right? Am I right? Am I right?
But how are they going to, like, the way they tackled that topic then and how they can tackle it now while still being funny is going to be fascinating.
That's a really good point.
Like,
yeah.
That movie is funny, but, like, its shelf life is not probably progressed.
Sure. Beyond. There's a lot of movies from the 80s that didn't age well.
No, indeed.
Yeah. 16 Candles, Pretty Woman.
Which
yeah.
I love, but I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Amen. All right, David, thank you so much.
Thanks,
and welcome back, pal.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, it's a cover up of a different sort. We can't wait to explain when The Rush continues.